Okay, today's Shiur and Sefer Yehoshua, we are looking today at chapter 5. Chapter 5, everyone find it in their particular book that they're using. It begins with the following statement. Vayehi ki shmoa kol malchei Amori asher be'ever ha-yarden yama v'chol malchei ha-kanani asher al hayam et asher hovish Hashem et mea yarden mipenei b'nei Yisrael ad avranu, or as we read it, avram vayimas levavam v'lo hayavam od ruach mipenei b'nei Yisrael. It says that basically the nations of the world heard about the splitting of the sea that had taken place, the splitting of the Jordan, I should say, just like it happened, we know, that we say in the Shira, that when they split the Red Sea, that when God split it, also other nations heard about it. It was heard around the world, as it were. And so, too, this is the case here. And as a result, so the people, especially the people of Canaan, who would have tried to destroy the Jewish people, it says that now their spirit fell within them because of this miraculous event that had taken place. By the way, how did they know about this? So, one of the Midrashim says that, if you remember, it says that the water went up in like a pillar, it said, and the size of the pillar, it says, according to one Midrash, was like 12 miles, like it was 12 miles high. Okay, whatever it means, somehow they could see it, or they became aware that this event had taken place.
And yes? So there's a Midrash, you started going wrong, that by the Kriyas Yam Suf, Red Sea, that every single body of water the world split.
That's correct.
Is there anything, any comparable midrash for this splitting?
No, I don't, but that's a very good point that would distinguish that miracle from this miracle. That's a good point. In other words, you're saying by that event, first of all, everyone knew about it because anyone, like if you had a swimming pool, it split. If you had a glass of water, it split. That says, there it says, yeah. It says, Bayivaku Hamayim. It said the water split, and on that, Chazal say, it didn't just say the sea split, it said water. So it was the status of water everywhere was affected by this miracle. I don't remember seeing such a statement by the splitting of the Jordan, and yet still was heard to some degree, but you're right, not perhaps to the same degree as the splitting of the sea. But so this took place, and I find it interesting that this is being emphasized, and everyone heard about the splitting of the Jordan. Because, let me ask you, if you were crossing over into another land, and you know you're going to now be doing battle with these people, would you necessarily want everyone to hear about it? Would you want everyone to hear about it? No, you want to sneak into the border, cross over quietly, okay? Start making your battle plans. But no, everyone, we all just heard that they came over the border. Like today, you have it on TV. It's everyone knows it. It's been watched. It's so everyone knew about it. I guess this is being emphasized to tell us that the people would have faith that God could take these people, even if they knew that B'nai Israel were coming, even if they knew, because certainly this alerted them to the fact that this was going to take place. Going on to Pasuk Bet, Ba'etahi, at this time, Amar Hashem El Yoshua Aselecha Harvot Surim. God told Joshua to make literally sharpened, some might say stones, or taken to mean knives. Veshuv Molet B'nei Yisrael Shenit. And again, circumcise the Jewish people. Again, circumcise the Jewish people. So I just want to point out before asking what it means to circumcise them again, that this Ba'edahi, at that time, at that very time, and this is just my own comment here, again, would you think that now that the people have just come over the river and everyone knows about it because of this miracle, that it's a good time for everyone to now circumcise themselves or to be circumcised? Are you crazy? I mean, the nations are saying, oh, come, they're over there, they came into our land, let's go get them, and they're circumcising themselves. But again, it's okay, because we know when Avram Avinu, when Avram circumcised himself, it says he did so be'etzem ha'yom hazeh. He did so in the very midst of the day. There are people who are going to say, if you do something strange and barbaric and ridiculous like that, we're going to stop you. We're going to get you. And sometimes it says in the Torah, be'etzem ha'yom hazeh, that he did it right in the midst of the day, because we're told that that means that God was saying, oh yeah, do it right in the middle of the day. Let's see if anyone comes. Don't do it at night. We can't do circumcision at night anyway. It has to be during the day. But not at night when, he snuck it through. Yeah, he happened to do it when no one was looking. No, no. Just like when Noah went into the ark, I think it says also, he went to Etzem HaYom HaZeh. He went right in the midst of the day. Like people said, you're not going to get on that ark. You know, we're going to stop you. Oh yeah? God says, you try. We do it right in the middle of the day. It's not going to be done sneakily. So too, when Moses dies, it's Be'etzem HaYom HaZeh. It's in the midst of the day. People said, we're not going to let him go up to the top of that mountain. We're not going to let him go from us, even though they went to stone him just some months before. Instead, right, so no, I'm going to do it in the midst of the day. So too here, I'm just saying right at that time, when you think like it's the worst time to tell them to circumcise themselves. Come on. They're going to be sitting there in pain for 3 days, at least we know traditionally, and it's very difficult to do, and get to go circumcise themselves. They're about to go to war, and still God says, no, I want it to be done, and it'll still be successful nonetheless.
Well, is there an earlier parallel for collective circumcision?
There is. There is.
Because that
when,
casts light on the parallelism with the current.
Yes, well, that's a good point. The earlier source is that when the Jews had to eat the Passover sacrifice, it says, "Kol ben nechar lo yochal bo." Anyone in that case is not Jewish or wasn't circumcised, right? That person for the Passover sacrifice had to be circumcised in order to eat it. All right. So there too, they had to have a massive circumcision, and also at Mount Sinai to receive the Torah. Actually, they had to be circumcised, and here too, yes, this is a case where they have to have a communal circumcision because, as you'll see, they're going to have the Passover sacrifice again. And we will see in a moment why they have to have this circumcision. In fact, it says, as you saw, it said that they had to circumcise themselves, it says, a second time. Now, what do you mean a second time? I don't know if you understand this, but you can only be circumcised once. You can't be circumcised twice. Once you're circumcised, that's it. You can't, it's not a mitzvah you can do many times. As you know, you don't go to a child's bris and say, "Well, is he going to do it before his bar mitzvah? Is he going to do it again? Maybe before he gets married, again, bring himself into the covenant." You know, no, you can't. You can only do it once. In fact, the Beit HaLevi answers a famous question, I believe, the Beit HaLevi regarding this, and that is, the question is asked, we are told that Abraham, for example, kept all of the commandments even before they were given. You ever heard that? Kept all the commandments before they were given. God didn't even command him yet, and he already did it out of his prophetic knowledge. He did it. Okay, fine. So I don't understand. If that's the case, so why didn't he do circumcision until God commanded him to do it? If he did everything else before even God commanded him, so why did he wait in regards to circumcision? Now, there are different answers. Some say, for example, I believe that since circumcision involves cutting yourself and hurting yourself, so there, which is normally forbidden by the Torah, so in order to do something like that, you really have to be commanded first by God to do it. But the Beit HaLevi says something else. He says, this is Soloveitchik's great-grandfather, he said that Abraham's intention was this. Some of you may know, what is it greater to do? Is it greater to do a mitzvah when you're commanded or when you're not commanded? In other words, let's say a man has to sit in a sukkah. A woman doesn't. Let's say a woman decides, which she can, I'm going to sit in the sukkah anyway. I want to do the mitzvah. I'm going to sit in the sukkah. Who gets greater reward? The man who has an obligation to sit in the sukkah or the woman who does not have an obligation? And the answer is the man. Even though you might think the woman should get more, after all, she's doing it voluntarily. We take such great emphasis in our society, put a great emphasis on volunteerism, you know. He volunteered, he didn't have to do it, he did it out of the goodness of his heart. And yet, in Jewish tradition, we believe, among other reasons, that since a person is commanded to do it by God, will be tempted more greatly by his evil inclination not to do it. Because what do you mean God told me to do it? What if I don't want to? You know what I mean? You have someone over you telling you to do something. Your natural reaction is, I don't want to do it. Where if it's just up to you, maybe I'll do it. Maybe I won't. Okay, so you'll decide to do it. No, there's no pressure. There's no one opposing you. So the greater reward goes to the one who is obligated. So Avram Avinu, according to Beit HaLevi, his intention was, I'll do all the mitzvahs now, and then one day when God commands me, I'll do them again, being commanded, because it's greater to do it when you're commanded than when you're not commanded. But circumcision, that I can't do without being commanded, and then do again when I'm commanded, because you can only do it once. So that's why in regards to that particular mitzvah, it says specifically God commanded him to do it. He didn't do it before he was commanded, because then he could not in the future do it again and reach that higher level. Those who were born, let's say, throughout the desert experience, so had not been circumcised. Remember, they had to wander for 40 years. And everyone else died, right, who believed the sin of the spies, so they had to die. There was a whole new generation, correct, who had not been circumcised, and they had not been circumcised. Why not? After all, 8 days you have to circumcise. Why were they not circumcised? So Midrashim say that one of the reasons was because since they were always on the move in the desert, and circumcision is, you know, has medical concerns, that you just can't circumcise because then you're moving, then you move again, and so it would have been a danger for him. And also they talk about the fact that there were certain winds which were lacking in the desert that were, would have had a positive effect upon them after they were circumcised, and those were lacking. So in other words, the atmospheric conditions, for whatever reason, were not proper in the desert for circumcision to occur, so they did not circumcise themselves. And here, on the verge now of number one, going into the land of Israel, where we mentioned previously in last week's class, remember we mentioned that when you say the blessing in benching, in Birkas HaMazon, after you eat, when you say the blessing on the land, you only have a right to the land if you're circumcised. You have to say, V'al b'ritcha shechem tamta v'yusareinu. You must mention specifically that God circumcised the members of the Jewish people, and this is part of the promise to Abraham. If you keep this covenant, I will give you the land. That was necessary as they're entering the land now. And also, as we said, to eat the Passover sacrifice, they also had to be circumcised. Because that's why at this point, even though they hadn't done it until now, they would have to do it. There's no further time you can wait. It has to be done at this time.
Yeah. According to the Chazal that Rashi mm-hmm. brings down, we know that circumcision includes basically three stages. The third is simply the cycle of the blood, but the first two are two different parts of the physiological act of circumcision. So according to Chazal, apparently, the only circumcision that Abraham was commanded was to do what's called Mila, the basic circumcision, stage number one.
The cutting of the foreskin.
They say that that's what, the sons of Abraham were not progeny of Isaac were involved with. So then, at this point, apparently for the first time, I'm not really sure now why, probably because for 40 years they couldn't do it for the physical reasons, and you couldn't do anything. So now that this is the first time since the Torah was given that they need to do this mitzvah, so they have to do the full mitzvah. It was the second stage of Priya. And so, although I'm sure there was some blood, but there are also those men who had been around previously. Let's say they were under 20, right? They didn't die in the desert. So they would have to undergo a second operation.
Because of the second element, which according to the rabbis was not present originally, initially, so therefore there was a need to do this now a second stage. That would be according to that for you, correct? It then says, Ve'asula Yoshua Harvot Surim Vayamol Epnei Israel El Givat Aralot. Then it says that Yoshua, some say he did it all himself. Others say, how could that be? It's impossible for him to do thousands and thousands of circumcisions, that he oversaw the circumcision process take place. And he did this at this place that's called the Hill of the Foreskins. In other words, this is somewhat a symbolic statement. I think that they don't forget they cut thousands of foreskins that day, kind of, you know, creating, if you will, a a group of them together. So it was called the Hill of the Foreskins. That's where this was done. All right, they named the place after this act. V'zeh adavar asher mal Yoshua kol ha'am yotzei mi'mitzrayim v'zecharim kol anshei milchama meitu b'midbar v'derech v'tzeitam mi'mitzrayim. Then it says this is a place where he circumcised them all. All the males had died who would have gone to war in the desert. Don't forget, because they believed the sin of the spies as they went out of Egypt. So therefore they had to do this. Then it says in the next verse, Kimulim hayu kol ha'am hayotzim, because when they went out of Egypt, they were all circumcised. Kol ha'am hayiludim b'midbar, as we said before, and all those who were born in the desert over this great period of time, baderech b'teitam mitzrayim lo malu. Those people had not been circumcised, as we previously mentioned, and therefore now there was this obligation to do this. Now, it happens that this whole notion, let me just emphasize here, it says all the men after all had died. This is a very important place to put in the following point. Where are the women here? You know, where are the women? Ah, they're going to have this great emphasis on circumcision, and therefore you have to do that to get in, be part of the covenant. Where are the women? So there's an interesting midrash that's right on here. It says, on this statement that all the men died, it says, Vatamot Shah Miriam. You know, it says in Parshat Chukat that Miriam died. All right? Miriam, Moshe's sister, died. Shezo Meta Bilvad, Mita Bilvad Mikol Anashim, Shiatsu Mitzrayim. It says, this is the only death of, we have recorded, of a woman who went out of Egypt. Mimnei Shelo Meta Isha B'Midbar. Because women did not die in the wilderness before they went to the land of Israel like the men did, because the women did not believe the report of the spies, just like the women did not believe, if you recall, and worshiped the golden calf. So too they did not believe the sin of the spies, just like the women who we are told in Egypt, Midnei Nashim Sidkaniyo Nigalu Avotenu Mimitzrayim, because of righteous women is why the Jewish people were redeemed from Egypt. Either that means, for example, because we have a midrash that says that the women would continue to make themselves beautiful when their husbands came home from slaving, from work in Egypt. And there are people saying, you know, let's just go to bed and not have any physical relations anymore and not just go on with having children and so on. It's impossible, right? I mean, what are we going to do? And the women said, no, nothing doing, right? If the husband had come home, the women also looked dreary, so it wouldn't have been successful. But the women continued to look their best, as it were, when their husbands came home. They continued to have intimate relations. They continued to have children. They continued to have faith. And so, too, as you recall, perhaps the midrash that says that Moshe's parents, before he was born, had decided they're not going to have any more children, right? Amram Yocheved said, we're not going to have any more children. We're not going to bring people into this world, not only because they'd become slaves, but this is after Paro said he's going to destroy all the Jewish males and he's going to throw them into the Nile. So forget it. We're not going to have children and bring in a child into such a situation. And of course their daughter Miriam said to them, you're wrong. You're wrong. In fact, your decree is worse than Paro's, because Paro is decreeing only against the male children, that there should be no male children. We're going to drown them. But there'll be women. At least there'll be women who are born. But according to you, there are going to be no children. Anyone who follows suit after you, there'll be no children born. As a result, they believed, they saw that their daughter was right, and thereafter they had relations again, and that gave birth to Moshe Rabbeinu, to the Redeemer. But because of both of those cases, it's because of women that the Jewish people continued to go on and continued to have faith. So in all these situations, we see the greatness of women who are considered to be within the covenant at birth. They don't have to wait 8 days. You know, if a male child would die before 8 days, he was never in the covenant. He never had a birth, he wasn't in the covenant. If a woman would die before 8 days, she's in the covenant at birth. She's already in the covenant. So women are seen by many to be, to some degree, greater than men. They're already prepared. They're already perfected. They don't need continuous rehearsal and others to explain why women don't need as many mitzvot and so on, because women have a more natural inclination towards spirituality, perhaps. These are just some explanations. The Maharal and others say the same. So I'm just emphasizing that despite the lack of emphasis on women here and their not being circumcised, that we don't necessarily have to understand that to mean that they are unimportant. In fact, just the opposite. As I said, Chazal always emphasized the great importance and significance that women played in the redemption from Egypt. Going on to verse 9, Vayomer Hashem el Yehoshua hayom galoti et kerpat mitzrayim me'alichem vayigra shem hamakom ahu gilgal ad hayom hazeh. I guess Yehoshua says, is told by God, that this day, what God has uncovered, the shame of Egypt from you, and he has called this place therefore Gilgal until this day. On this statement, by the way, is where we get the custom. Now, talking about circumcision, of course, we're focusing on that. It says, there's a midrash that tells in Yalkut Shimoni that says, some of you may know this, that Kacha Yisrael Malin Ad Shenechaklu Shnestei Mamlachot, Israel would continue to circumcise itself until they split up into two kingdoms. And then it says Malchut Ephraim, the king of Ephraim, and Naom Meham Brit Milah, they stopped circumcising themselves. The Amad Eliyahu, and this is where then, some of you may know this, Elijah stood up, and he had great zealousness for what was going on. And he swore to God, he said, you shall not bring any rain to this people who have done this. Shamat Isabel, and Jezebel heard about it, the queen of the time, and she wanted to kill Eliyahu because they would all not be getting any rain. And then Eliyahu got up and he went to the mountain of Charev. Shamni Glalav, and then God, in a famous episode, revealed himself. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Amar Lo, and God said to him, Malacha Po Eliyahu. What are you doing here, Eliyahu, Elijah? What are you doing here? By Yomer Kana Kaniti. He said, what do you mean? I'm a zealous one for you, O God. Amar Lo, and God said to him, Li'olam Ata Mekanekanot. You're always zealous. You're always extreme, Eliyahu. Bashitim Al Gilu Yarayot. In Shitim, where it says there, Pinchas, if you remember, got involved when there was a blatant, outward, overt sexual act being taken between the Midianites and the Jewish men, okay, to try to bring them and corrupt them. And Pinchas took a spear and he killed the people, even though usually you can't do that. You have to have a court case, you have to bring them to court, you just can't do something like that. Right? And yet he did it because he was a zealous one for God. V'kan at mekanen. So too, you hear Eliyahu. Chazal say Pinchas and Eliyahu are the same person. Either it means they really were the same person, or one was a Gilgul, the other one was a reincarnation, if you will, of the other, or one had the same, if you will, personal approaches to life as the other. Exactly. Okay, this had the same same attitude, you know, and the same shita, we would say, same viewpoint as the other. So he said, you're always being zealous. Chayecha she'en Yisrael osin brit milah ad shata roe beinecha. You said that the Jewish people, you think they're not going to keep milah anymore, they're not going to keep circumcision, so he's complaining to God. I promise you they're going to keep it, and you're going to go to every bris. You're going to go to every circumcision there is. Mikan hikinu liyot osin moshav kavo demalach habrit. That's when it was decided that at a bris, if you've been to one, that they set up a kisei sheliyahu, a chair for Elijah. It's really a punishment. It sounds like it's a great honor. Oh, Eliyahu's here. Oh, it's a punishment. That, oh, you thought they weren't going to keep it? You're going to go to every bris, whatever that means. You're going to go to every bris, because how does he go to more than one, even much less a million? But there's a symbolic statement here that he would see that the Jewish people would be circumcised. And he's called Eliyahu Malach HaBrit. He's called Elijah, the angel of the bris. Don't forget, he can go to every Passover Seder. So no, what's the big deal? He can go to every bris. So, Shenamar Umalach HaBrit Asher Atem Chavatzim Hine Ba. It says, in fact, in the Tanakh itself, that Eliyahu is called the angel of the circumcision who will come. So Eliyahu, I think the idea is that it means Eliyahu is the symbol of redemption. And when people keep the covenant, and they keep the Passover obligation of the Korban Pesach, as we'll see the relation to the two in a second. So then Eliyahu, the symbol of redemption, comes to that place. Is that okay, Rabbi Berlog? You think there's something like that? Unless you really want to believe that he comes into every place at the same time. Even if he couldn't do it all at once. I mean, he's just one malach, even. He's not millions. I think it's a symbolic statement that Eliyahu is representative of the redemption. Mm-hmm. We know it says at the end of Malachi, the very end of the prophets, that the Hienochi Shalach Lachemet Eliyahu, God says, I'm sending you Elijah the prophet before the great day. He's going to be the harbinger to the Mashiach, the Messiah. And wherever you have a keeping of the bris, and a keeping, we'll see, of the Korban Pesach, as he comes Pesach night as well. So we can say that there, the redemption is near, and the redemption can take place. Right. So there's a machloket. You need four cups or five. So what we do is, we have four, but out of deference to the fifth reveal, there's a fifth cup. You pour the fifth cup, but you don't drink from it. And we call that Kosher Eliyahu. Oh, that's the cup of Elijah. Because when Elijah comes at the end of days, he will tell us, do you need four or five? Okay, so because of that, they call it Kosher Eliyahu, and that's how Eliyahu kind of gets involved in the Seder. Doesn't mean necessarily that he comes to every Seder, it's just because of that notion. All right. So anyway, this is interesting. This relationship between Eliyahu and the Bris, and now we're going to go into what Bnei Yisrael does next in verse 10. Vayachanu Bnei Yisrael b'Gilgal, and they camped in Gilgal. Yasu et haPesach, and then they made the Passover sacrifice, Barba'asar Yom LaChodesh Ba'erev, as they should on the 14th day of Nisan, Ba'arvot Yericho, right, in the plains of Jericho. All right? Now, I just want to mention various things here. So you have circumcision, and you have the Passover sacrifice. Is it just coincidence that these two elements are what they do right now, the minute they get across the river, before anything else, is just coincidence? So I want to ask you for a moment to compare both halachically, that's a Jewish law, legally speaking, and in terms of thoughts, some relationships between these two items. Okay? So let's first talk halachically. Some of you may know, yes?
Because there are only two positive commands, the bris and the faith of sacrifice, that if you fail to observe them without any legitimate excuse, you get the penalty of excision, whatever it is, kares, which is normally only given for negative.
That's correct. So those two commandments, of all positive commandments, like I don't put on tefillin, let's say. I don't put up mezuzah. Okay, you violated a positive commandment. You did not do a positive commandment, which you should have fulfilled. But you don't get this terrible punishment of kares, which is somewhat of divine death penalty, that you die an early death, or else you don't have children, or whatever it is. You don't get that because you didn't keep a positive mitzvah, except in these two cases, as Rabbi Berlow said. So what is the connection, therefore? Why should it be that way? Why should these two have that unique aspect to them? Is there any connection between these two? Okay? See, any other ideas? Some of you mentioned something before. The idea of identity. Circumcision makes a Jew identified as a Jew. Okay? And so too, the Korban Pesach, the Passover sacrifice, certainly if you recall how it emerged, right, was supposed to do what? What was the purpose of the Passover sacrifice? What was it supposed to do? Remember with the blood?
Identified
this is a Jewish home, so the angel of death would pass over. It is clear cut that both of these are for purpose of identity. I mean, the first thing we generally presume that God tells Abraham that your seed shall have the special signs to show that you're Jewish, whether other people did or not, that's something else to discuss. But certainly not from day 8 they didn't do it. They showed that even the ancients who did it much later, a later period of time. They did not do it on the 8th day. Okay, so they did it almost their whole lifetime, they would have this mark on them. And as we're saying again, so too the Passover sacrifice has this notion of identity of the Jew being connected with it.
I want to say the same thing, but in an even more concrete way. It's not good you have to compare religions. I'll say Lahavdil or Lahavdolos, but let's say Christianity. They have whatever, with different branches called different things, communion, let's say. It's a certain act that you have to be a member of good standing, and good standing of whichever part of Christianity you're celebrating it with. And if they consider you a member in good standing, so then you take part in a certain ritual as part of a communal fellowship. So the Havdil, I think that these two things, that the bris and the paschal sacrifice, and again, as the rabbi pointed out, that if you're not circumcised, you're not permitted to take part in the paschal sacrifice. But these were like two mitzvah, which were rituals that not only show identity, but they are, in a sense, a ritualistic way of celebrating identity and making a distinction who's in and who is not in.
Just add one thing but with that, with identity, also to merit entering the land of Israel.
Yeah,
what I mean to
which
say
is redemption.
What I'm going to call this is that these are your passports.
Yeah,
you get in,
yeah.
Just like the Abar Manel said, you remember the 12 stones, and like the mezuzah with God, with the Torah written on it, to get into the land of Israel, you have to realize this land is governed by the Torah. So it just seems to me like these are the passports. You want to come into the Eretz Yisrael, you want it to be your land, you have to be obviously committed to the bris, and also committed to the idea of the sacrifice, accepting God's kingship. Remember, they slaughtered the Egyptian god, and then to Jewish identity for this to happen. There are those who at times, even today, want to say, well, Israel can have its state, but it's not going to be a Jewish state. You know, that's one of like the solutions. Everyone will be there, like America. It'll be a state, and whoever wins, wins. If there are more Arabs and Jews, they'll vote out Shabbos, they'll vote out keeping kosher, whatever else. There won't be a Jewish state. It'll be a state, and Jews can live there. They can have their state, but it's not a Jewish state. So again, the identity aspect is critical for us being able to hold on to Eretz Yisrael. Now, I just want to push this even further. Now, listen to this. This is what's great about giving a class, because it makes you think and, you know, focus on yourself when you're on ideas that you wouldn't necessarily think of otherwise, okay? I never really thought of this before, but think about the bris for a second. Think about a circumcision. Think illustratingly, you know, think of the picture of a circumcision. What do you see? Think of a circumcision. What do you see? Let your imagination go wild for a minute. You walk in and you see someone doing circumcision. What do you think is happening? What do you think is happening? What do you think?
Surgical operation.
Is that what you think?
A party.
A party? Wait, I'm saying you never saw something before. You see there's something, the moils over the baby.
It's a kind of sacrifice.
It's a sacrifice. It looks to me like it's a sacrifice. Okay? I mean, the moils got a knife. Okay, we say, yeah, well, the moils, he's not going to do anything to you. But the guy, if you just come in, you see a guy with a knife there, there's no baby crying. Okay, and he's down, they're holding him down. Okay? So, you know, maybe you've heard this before, but they say the sandek at a bris, that when the person who holds the baby is like the mizbeach. He's considered to be like the altar. Just like you put a sacrifice on the altar, you put the baby on the knees of the sandek, the one holding the baby, and it's really called an altar. Now, where does that come from? So I found in the Zohar, the Vilna Gaon in Shulchan Aruch brings this down. It says in the Zohar, this is in Parshat Lech Lecha, Simon Taf Kaf Hei, in the Perush HaSulam version, edition. It says, Haiman Da'akri Brei Korbana Kame Kadosh Baruch Hu. It says that a person who brings, it says Akri, that they're talking about making a bris here at the end of Lech Lecha, when Avraham has his circumcision when he circumcises Yishmael, and it says that someone who brings his son to be circumcised, it's like bringing a sacrifice in front of God. It's like bringing a sacrifice in front of God. It's just interesting. And again, it says in the next siman, it also says, Makrivin Banayu Lekarbana. When you bring your child for the bris, you bring your child, as it were, as a sacrifice. Okay? And I just want to point out that not only that, but So I'm just connecting, first of all, the idea of the bris to the Korban Pesach. They're both related sacrificially. There's blood involved in both. The blood of the bris, which we say, blood often leads to death when you're bleeding. Here we say you're going to live by this blood. Okay? And so too, with the Passover sacrifice, this blood, you're going to live by this blood. Putting this blood on your doors, you're going to live. The Malach HaMavet will pass over you, the angel of death, and you will live by this blood. Again, connecting these two ideas. Now, the thought that this is a sacrifice as well, so do you remember that when it introduces the whole idea of the Akedah, of the sacrifice of Isaac, the ultimate sacrifice, you may recall that it begins like this. It says, Vayehi acharei adrim ha'ela. It says, after these things, and after these things. And the rabbis tell us what these things were. It was after these things. What things? What just happened? What things? So one medrash says, Devarim is from the language meaning really words. It was after these words. Devarim can mean words or things. It was after these words. What words? That when Yishmael was circumcised, he was 13 years old. A much more difficult you know, we say a thing to do than when you're 8 years old. You know, obviously it's much more hard, it's hard to do a circumcision when a person's older. Okay? So apparently the Medrash says Yishmael said to Yitzchak, he said, your circumcision was nothing, right? You were a little boy and you feel it. Look at me, I had to go through it when I was an adult. I had to feel all the pain and everything at age 13. Okay? Oh, I my connection to God, my worship was on a much higher level than yours. And Yitzchak responded in a famous medrash. He said, that's not true. Now, this has Yitzchak responding. And he says, if God would tell me to give myself as a sacrifice, I would do it. Now, according to this view, Yitzchak knew darn well what was happening when Abraham was taking him up the mountain. Don't forget, he was 37, really, according to our tradition. He was not a little boy. And there's a whole debate, did he know what was happening or not? According to this, he knew what was happening when Abraham was taking him to Mount Moriah. And because, according to this Midrash, he's the one who, in a sense, offered himself to show that I would do anything for God. What, you think I would just do, it says, one limb? Yeah, because one limb, Yishmael said, when you're a little boy, you didn't even feel it. He said, I would give everything, my whole body, for God. So this idea of a sacrifice, again, connected to the bris, it grew out of this idea of the bris. I would go more. I'd give more limbs. Okay? I'd give my whole self. Starting from the bris isn't enough. I'll go to a full sacrifice. And that's kind of how this idea developed. So, in a sense, the bris idea, I'm just wondering as well, I guess you can't say it because the Akeh doesn't come afterwards, but could it be that when you have the sacrifice there at the real bris taking place, is it not just a bris, is it really a sacrifice, is it even an Akedah, I'm just saying, scenario that I am a father here who, like Abraham, is willing to offer my son, if it would have to be, God, as a sacrifice to you, and could that be seen as like an Akedah experience, the sacrifice of Isaac, that is in a sense part of the rhythm of Jewish living that goes on a regular basis in our lives? Just a thought that I wanted to express.